Hello everyone, and I would like to invite the people that are in the back, if you're interested, come close, because the visuals are a big part of this presentation, so the better you see them, the better. So yeah, this talk was conceived as a reflection on what I had the privilege to experience as curator of the conference area of two main countercultural festivals in Europe. Boom Festival in Portugal, some of you have been there, Boom Festival, and Fusion Festival here in Germany. So, I wanted to make sense of certain dynamics that I was observing in terms of the cultural identities of these two festivals and their origins. From there, I developed a broader analysis of the values, principles, and objectives that arose within the 60s counterculture and their resonance with today's festivals, especially in Europe. So these are two of some of the teams that I had the privilege to work with in Boom and here in Content. The sign is still the same. It's good to see. So because of the complexity of the territory I want to analyze, I will need to make some generalizations, use sweeping statements, and not always I will be able to adopt a nuanced discourse. But nuances and contradictions are there, and the map is not the territory. I felt it could be useful to draw a general overview of the past and use it as a reference when looking at the present and thinking about the future of festivals. This is a work in progress, certainly not the final words on these topics, so feedback is also very welcome. Also, I am a white, Italian, cisgendered woman, a neo-pagan, progressive, feminist psytrancer from Generation X. An identity that carries both potentials and limitations, which will be reflected in my perspective. I have extensively studied mystery religions from ancient Greece, especially the Eleusinian mysteries, the cult of Dionysus, which also offer interesting insights into cultural currents that resist dominant oppressive narratives by way of dancing to repetitive beats and use of psychotropics. I could not mention this, but I will only make brief references to this. So if you're interested also in this part of the story, I invite to follow my work. So what is a counterculture? A counterculture is a culture whose values and norms of behavior differ substantially from those of mainstream or dominant culture, with accompanying hope for a better life or a new society. Counterculture is sometimes conceptualized in terms of generational conflict. So this bit about the generational conflict, we will go back to it on and on in the presentation. So during the 60s, the hippies became the largest and most visible countercultural movement in history because of its huge influence across the globe. They became the counterculture, the mother of all countercultural festivals, of course, was Woodstock. Far from being the only festival, it was the most representative of that era. Close to 500,000 people, this is like five times the people that are here, more or less, more than five times the people that are here today. So think the size of this event. From the perspective of event production, it was both a nightmare and a miracle, as you can imagine. Still largely unmatched in terms of cultural influence, a landmark for a whole generation because it supported the creation and spreading of a new identity, which with its distinctive values, beliefs, and practices. all of which would have probably been impossible without the incredible rock music produced in those years and its function as a formidable carrier of the revolutionary ethos. So how did we get here to Woodstock, and how did we get from Woodstock to here? This is just a modern festival. So generationally speaking, the original hippies are the boomers. Let's not forget that. They get a bad rap these days, but they were off to a good start. They grew up both at the peak of the Cold War and at the peak of standardized consumerism, a time of unprecedented wealth and abundance, but also unprecedented fear of total annihilation, which, interestingly, we are experiencing again today. Also a time of hyper-normalization, to use a term used by Adam Curtis in one of his amazing documentaries. So if you complied, what is hyper-normalization? If you complied to a series of very strict and generally very patriarchal social rules, material abundance would automatically bring happiness to everyone. Right? So baby boomers, born between 1946 and 64, use their privilege to say, this is not happiness. We want something more authentic, more original, peaceful, spiritual, individualized, not standardized. And we want this for everyone. We want collective liberation from the system of oppression, from consumerism, from patriarchy, from institutionalized religions, etc. To sum it up, it was a rebellion against any form of traditional authority and the possibility to imagine and put into practice a totally different reality. So remember the definition of counterculture, imagining another, better society, another reality. The hippie counterculture was a movement of movements. And this is important to keep in mind in this presentation. The political side consisted of a strong pacifist movement calling for the end of the Vietnam War, the Cold War, and any war. This in the picture was the biggest demonstration that ever happened back in the USA back then. And here we see more images of their creativity in their demonstrations. The political side was generally associated with the New Left, which centered their campaigns around free speech or the ability to lead on-campus protests and demonstrations. And what they managed to achieve in these days, the students, is now also being used by students today, using the same freedom that was gained in the 60s to organize demonstrations and occupy schools. Let me go back. So also part of the New Left was the civil rights movement started by people of color to abolish racial segregation in the 50s. And then expanded to include the abolishment of discrimination based on gender, sexual orientation, ethnicity, etc., which had enormous resonance across the globe. The Gay Liberation Front, triggered by the Stonewall riots, which was widely supported for the first time by heterosexual people, planting the seed of the modern LGBTQAI+ movement. We have more pictures of their creativity in the demonstrations. This one was in the UK. The Women Liberation Movement, known as Second Wave Feminism, started in the US and spread all over the Western world like wildfire, profoundly changing the role of women in society, even if it initially benefited white women more than other ethnicities. We have here Italy and Iceland, France, Brazil, and Australia. Then this was followed by the third wave of feminism, characterized especially by the work of activists, women of color like Audre Lorde and bell hooks. Probably you're familiar with their work. So the battle to end racism was also part of the hippie movement, inspired by Martin Luther King and the peaceful protest in the 50s, like Selma. Probably some of you have seen the movie a few years ago. Parallel to this were the Black and Indigenous-led liberation movements, the seeds of what is today Black Lives Matter and the decolonization movement. There was also an ecological side, and many important environmental initiatives were born in that period. Then there was a spiritual side, stemming from a critique of to Christianity as the only path to the divine. This gave rise to the inquiry into alternative spiritualities, like Western esotericism, tarot or astrology, Eastern philosophy, neo-paganism, indigenous revivalism, what is called now neo-shamanism also, even if both the terms indigenous and shamanic are problematic to use in relation to Western identities. And I just put it there like this. So all of these, they formed a so-called cultic milieu. This is the word that the academic researchers use, that from the 90s on was generally referred to as the New Age. So this spiritual part, this inquiry into alternative spiritualities led in the 90s to the movement called the New Age. Then, of course, psychedelics. And I'm going to drink a bit of water when we get to psychedelics. So psychedelics were, of course, a big part of the revolution. The movement fueled the use of psychedelics, and vice versa. Psychedelics fueled the movement. Much can be said, but the important bit to understand here is that the set and setting of the use of psychedelics in the 60s, where the values of civil rights, pacifism, collective liberation, etc., what we have seen until now, that's what psychedelics as non-specific amplifiers amplified. So I don't know if this definition is familiar around here. Psychedelics as non-specific amplifiers of the set and setting of the people taking them. So if the values of the people, the individuals or the groups taking them are different, they can amplify different values and beliefs. So they're not strictly connected to the 60s values only. This is something that we are waking up to understanding more and more. And this is something it's important to be aware of. Because this means that if used in a different context with different values, they might amplify a different worldview. So these souls, the political, the spiritual, the ecological, the psychedelic, they were intertwined in a complex and very ambiguous relationship. Some people did not care about spirituality or politics, and they were only in for the sex and drugs. We know that, the more hedonistic side. And also politically, it was not homogeneous. There were strong disagreements between different ideologies and different opinions on the level of radicality which should be implemented, which is still happening today. But I want to point out that the hippie movement was a broad umbrella under which different identities and struggles found their home. And this was one of their strengths, this collective identity made of a plurality of possibilities and directions. The hippie counterculture ended up being extremely influential from a cultural perspective. If today's students can strike and occupy schools, if workers can unionize, if women can divorce, are free to choose over their bodies where they still can, and free to dress as they wish, if we can have sex before marriage without losing our reputation, this is huge, because if we think about our mothers and grandmothers, this is very different, especially as women, to a certain level also men. But so if there's food co-ops and much, much more, whether or not we identify as hippies, we owe these freedoms to them. They are, as someone says, the ancestors we cannot get rid of. So this success was the reason why capitalism morphed to become attractive to the new revolutionary consumers. You can be a revolutionary, but you are still a consumerist. Do you want the revolution? We sell you the revolution. So this tendency is exemplified by this 1972 Coca-Cola ad, where we witness the strategy of associating something hippies liked and wanted, diversity, utopia, harmony, peace, love, with corporate products. So let's look at it.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. I'd like to teach the world to sing.
Sing with me.
Perfect harmony.
Perfect harmony.
I'd like to buy the world a Coke and keep it company.
So, very catchy. You're gonna sing it in your head the whole night. I'm sorry. It's not my fault, it's their fault. They understood what to do. And in YouTube, in the comments under the video, there is still people saying this was the best commercial in the history of commercial. In a way, it's like saying you fucked our brains so well. We loved it so much. Please do it again. And they did it again, because this is 1972, more than 50 years ago. And we know how refined these techniques have become these days. So in many ways, this kind of operation is the beginning of the end. People are still raving about this ad in the comments of YouTube, like I told you. In the mid-70s and 80s, the winds started to change. Politically, we witnessed the conservative backlash, or the counter-revolution, which brought an end to utopia. It was these politicians and many more. This period saw the implementation of ruthless neoliberalism, leading to increased poverty, unemployment, and deterioration of income distribution. So what happened to the counterculture, their music, and their festivals? In this period, the main urban counterculture was punk. Very strong also here in Germany. Mainly working class, quite angry, sometimes quite depressed as well, as an understandable response to bleak living conditions, but with a social, political, activist edge. And here you see against sexism, racism, homophobia, heteronormativity, strike breakers, transphobia, and pigs, not the animals. So, the punks developed pretty much in antithesis to the hippie movement, according to a very common phenomenon termed by French philosopher Gregory Bateson, schismogenesis. This consists of defining one's identity in opposition to someone else's identity. We do it sometimes even when we speak one-to-one. It's a phenomenon that can bring to increased polarization. and we do it between groups. This is quite a common phenomenon. Once you recognize it, you can see it in many different places. And so in this case, defining one's identity in opposition to someone else's identity, both in terms of aesthetics and attitude, and in a way, the values were separated. One part of the counterculture brought on specific values, and another part brought other values, and we will see this. So punks were less idealist. Their world was a different place than the world where hippies felt that everything was possible. But the punks are the ones who brought forward many of the political fights of the 60s, like anti-fascism, feminism, queer rights, trans rights, all rooted in their immediate needs for survival in a patriarchal and consumeristic reality. The use of different pronouns, maybe here people know, but it's not woke, it's punk. And this is something that especially the new generations, not everybody knows. And also I didn't know until recently. So in the late 90s, we jump, we go further. This was the time of the anti-globalization movement. So this, from the 60s, this was the movement that reached a global dimension further than the others. It was mainly aimed at limiting the power of corporations, which was met by brutal police repression. This was the traumatic beginning also of my political activism with many other Gen Xers in Genoa for the G7 protest in 2001, where a guy was killed by the police. In this phase, the counterculture went underground, but was still very much alive in raves, free parties, squats, technivals, techno with a K, with a marked anti-consumerist and anarchist ethos. Berlin and Germany have an incredibly rich countercultural history in this phase, and I would be grateful to be pointed to people and resources that can make me understand better this phase. If there's someone here that later wants to send me stuff, I would really appreciate it. So these initiatives reclaim the free spaces that would function outside of consumeristic and corporate dynamics, like the temporary autonomous zones conceptualized by Hacking Bay. This was a very important book for my generation. So the oldest and biggest festival of reference for the punk techno culture in Europe is Fusion, starting in the late 90s. Its ethos retained the sharp anti-capitalist, queer feminist punk edge, with a focus on supporting the political activism of the different groups constituting the wider community. Economically also is totally independent and have no corporate sponsors. So this is a question I found, you know, I go on social media and I see what people are writing about. And this is something I found as part of the latest debates that are happening online also, including Fusion and what's happening in Gaza. And so this guy is asking, what does a festival have to do with politics? So as an external person, I still think that Fusion, even if it's not perfect, even if there can be mistakes, is still the only and best example of how to welcome difficult political debates in a festival, in a large-scale festival. It is still the only one and the best example, and I just wanted to underline that. So let's read what is written on the Fusion website, and connect also to what we have learned until now about the counterculture. So in the website, they state their mission, like, what are we here for? We are all here because we believe that the world outside has been lost to the forces. Oh no, sorry, guys. Is this something else? Allora, I will read from here. Far from everyday life, we celebrate 4 days of parallel society of a special kind, looking for a possibly better world. We know there is always a but. we also feel that there's no real place where all of this comes true. Nevertheless, or exactly because of that, it is important that fusionists from all corners of the continent meet in this very place. They feel what makes us all brothers and sisters, the desperate search for more than this life can offer. It's all that we want, and we want it now, right now. So we hear that, so this is written probably in the 2000s, maybe even recently. So we hear the echoes of what I was saying was defining the 60s counterculture, creating a better society, a place where we can try as best as we can to materialize the dreams for a more just and peaceful society. So I also wanted to mention briefly the Berlin techno scene, rooted around the same anti-patriarchal, queer feminist, anti-consumerist, and anti-fascist values. And what an amazing achievement that it was added to the country's list of intangible cultural heritage in recognition of its contribution to the cultural identity of the city. Congratulations, guys, because congratulations to everybody who contributed for this. But so what happened to the hippies? We've been following until now the punks and then the techno movement. So what happened to the hippies in the 80s? They went to India. In the 70s and 80s, many fled to India to take care of their inner journey, where they felt they had more agency than the agency that they could have in the outside world. So they fought, they demonstrated, they went in the street, they believed in it, but at some point they really clashed with the system. And the system with the counter-revolution took over again. So many people, disappointed, said, you know what, the thing that I can still change is myself. So I'm going to take care of that. So here we see some of the mottos that are typical of this moment. Peace within, peace throughout. Let there be peace, and let it begin with me. Change yourself so that you can change the world. This is something I was very familiar with, coming from the more new agey psytrance scene. And now I know that it's true, but it's not totally true. Because it's true that inner work and inner self-development is very important, and it can change the world, but often it's your world that it changes. Your relationship with your partner, with your parents, with your friends. But does this end poverty in the world? Does this really bring peace to the people that are still struggling with chronic warfare? It doesn't. So if we don't couple the two forms of activism, we risk of not being as efficient and effective as we could be. So the hippies went on the hippie trail and they landed in Goa. And now I'm going to read you from a zine that was printed in the 70s in Goa, where they also state their mission. Why did they go to Goa? What are they looking for? We are all here because we believe that the world outside has been lost to the forces of opportunity and power. The people and spirit of the outside world are not concerned with freedom, love, dance, and all the things that bring wisdom and happiness to us here in Goa. But they seem to be in love with contraction, to close themselves within the walls of their concrete cities and minds, to oppress all forms of harmony with our mother nature. We've all been aware of this for quite some time. We've chosen an alternative place and space in our lives and on this planet. And that place is Goa. So it's very beautiful. But also in this process, they left a lot of the politics behind. So in Goa, the hippies dedicated themselves to yoga, meditation, and LSD-fueled full moon parties on the beach. From psychedelic rock, with the influence of electronic music coming from Germany, Ibiza, etc., they gave birth to a new genre called Goa Trance first and Psytrance later in the early 2000s. So it's important to state, so here we see the first DJs. It's important to state that most, if not all, the music that accompanied Western countercultural movements like rock, punk, disco, acid house, techno, all come from music styles invented and pioneered by people of color. I cannot go too much in this now, but it's good to remember that counterculture doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens within a context of specific power dynamics of appropriation. Could it be that even the counterculture bears the stamp of those oppressive dynamics, even when it tries to liberate itself from it? This is just some food for thought. So Goa trance parties were a mix of escapism, hedonism, and mysticism. From my perspective, the highlighting of the mystical potential of modern celebrations is actually very revolutionary and has important consequences. So in Goa, there was a lot of diversity in terms of westernized nationalities. It was actually an important moment when youths from these countries finally got to see each other as siblings after the world wars. If you think about it, the French with the Germans and the Italians and the British, the Americans and the Japanese, they were all coming from war with each other. And this was the first time that they were getting rid of these ghosts from the past. And it must have been pretty amazing and liberating to be in those parties. So in terms of social status, many of the hippies, even if not all, belonged to the middle to upper class. There were many black sheep of wealthy families whose act of rebellion consisted of living together naked on the beach, which is not always the fantasy of someone that is born poor. So in the 90s, out of the Goa trance scene, many psychedelic trance festivals were born in various parts of the world. So this is the first flyer of Boom Festival, 1997. But also, for example, actually here in Germany, the WUV experience was the first of this lineage, and it already started in 1991. And then later we have Ozora, just to mention a few, but there are actually many, many of them. And now I'm going to show you a clip from WUV Experience 1991 to see the vibe, to hear the music. And also, yeah, it's more than 30 years, I guess. So it's interesting to see what they were doing. The faces could be us, right? The way that they dance is very individualized. There was not this same way that sometimes it can happen with certain styles of electronic music. Everybody, each person was in their own trip. And that was also the thing, that each one was really, I talked with people from those days, and that was really the thing, to express yourself. So this lineage is one that continues more explicitly the psychedelic culture of the 60s and continues to update in it to modern times. So the cultural pillars of these festivals are psychedelics, both in the aesthetics, in the promotion of the conscious use of psychedelics, harm reduction spaces that were pioneered in psychedelic festivals, but also sustainability, ecology, regenerative practices, which were pioneered by Boom in the early 2000s, and also New Age spiritualities and practices, but which can sometimes end up being appropriated and also risk to be commodified. These are the places where we need to pay attention. but also self-development, etc. In some cases, there is still a certain no corporate logos and sponsors ethos. This is still present in most of them, which define them as independent. So when we speak of independent festivals, often it means that they don't receive corporate sponsorships. And if you know something about event production, this is a very brave decision to take, because if you get in trouble, if the festival for some reason doesn't go well, often it's on the shoulders of the producers or the collectives producing it, you know, to deal with the losses. But generally, psychedelic festivals are a spiritual but not political kind of context. And in times like this, when political neutrality does not really exist, this can carry with it its own set of challenges. So on the positive side, I would like to remember that the cultural areas in psychedelic festivals, like Liminal Village that we see here in Boom, which was born in 2004, so this is really like a pioneering concept in a festival, they could be considered also the precursors of psychedelic conferences, supporting, for example, the legalization efforts in the therapeutic field. We do a lot of presentations to educate the public on what it means that now we are about to be able to legalize, with its pros and cons, also to be very critical about how capitalism is also appropriating, co-opting psychedelic culture. So these are big topics that we discuss. And yeah, so one more thing, psychedelic festivals pioneering harm reduction spaces. This is Cosmic Care in Boom. It looks different now, but I wanted also to pay homage to the humble beginning of something that inspired also other festivals and also inspired lots of psychotherapists to become psychedelic psychotherapists. So, some conclusions. My wish is that at least some festivals, maybe even new ones, can continue the tradition of committing to spreading countercultural values beyond profit-driven strategies. Because yes, festival can be incredibly transformative experiences. People live as different people. But what kind of different people will also depend on the kind of set and setting promoted and supported by the event. Do we want festivals to be laboratories where another world is possible, or la-la lands where a few privileged people can escape to forget about the horrors of the world? Do we want to change the status quo, or do we want to maintain the status quo? So all those socio-political threads that were weaved together in the 60s are still here. Social justice with the Me Too movement, the Black Lives Matter, the decolonization movement, alternative spiritualities, also with the spreading of practices that we generally called shamanic or to heal with altered state of consciousness. They're also spreading. Environmentalism with Friday for Future, Extinction Rebellion, etc. Feminism, queer rights, and of course psychedelics are still here, and even more so. But also the threats that counterculture was fighting against are still here. Nuclear war and any kind of war, conservative politics, corporatization, climate change, misogyny, homophobia, racism, and other forms of discriminations. The difference is that the counterculture now is scattered. There is not one Woodstock. And our communities are separated, often co-opted by consumerism and commodification, plagued by polarizations, manipulations, creating a sense of defragmentation and isolation, which can feel daunting and frustrating. The risk for many of us is to drown in hopelessness, or at best, to use festivals exclusively as experiences where we briefly escape from that hopelessness. So what to do? My wish is that we rekindle a sense of kinship with the others in recognition of the common origin and aims of our struggles and create events that celebrate that extended kinship. So young people, millennials, Gen Z here, I'm talking specifically to you. My suggestion is also that we dare to extend that kinship even further beyond the West to countercultural movements in Arab, Asian, African, Latin countries, First Nations, ex-Soviet nations, for example, in Georgia and Azerbaijan, where local techno scenes have led incredibly revolutionary actions, or Iran with the Woman Life Freedom Movement, or, of course, the amazing Palestinian techno movement. The next global countercultural movement might not be led by Westerners. And wouldn't that be amazing? If that's the case, will we be able to dance to their tunes, literally and metaphorically, with humility, respect, enthusiasm, and true solidarity? And I have to say that here in Fusion, I've seen examples of this happening also. With the problematics of it, there is an intention for that. So the solution, if there is any, is not about stitching the hippies together with the punks or the hipsters in a Frankenstein-esque operation. It's more about finding new waves to weave previous countercultural threads, to create new patterns, new identities, new alliances, build new bridges, new festivals, new music styles, on the basis of those common values that in the past inspired millions of people to change the world for the better. Revolution is not a one-time, one-place, or one-people event. So as the hippies would say, together we can make magic happen. And only the gods know how much we need that magic right now. Thank you. So thank you so much for your attention, which these days is the most precious thing that we have. And if you have some questions, I will be happy to reply, but I sit down. Yeah, take some time to feel what emerges. It was a lot.
Perhaps I can start with the first question. My first moment, what about the right-wing movements who are going to be right now kind of a counterculture, which is quite en vogue at the moment? Where would you place these in your history of counterculture?
So this is why I like Fusion. We go straight to the hard questions, to the heat of the debate. Yeah, so what I've observed, you know, when I was explaining the New Age and how the New Age took on mainly the spiritual activism, the like deep search into alternative spiritualities. This deep search in alternative spiritualities is common to various parts of the political spectrum. Actually, the left side is more resistant, especially the Marxist side of it, to spirituality in general. And so the right wing actually is very interested. And we know the Nazis and the connections with esotericism, the use of symbology, the different kinds of mythological narratives that they also rediscovered. Because neo-paganism is not always non-patriarchal. When we go into pagan times, we also go in patriarchal times. So it depends how far back we go, I think. So the furthest back, we can also encounter non-patriarchal societies. And so it's very risky and edgy to go in the past and bring back these alternative spiritualities. So yeah, if the New Age is depoliticized, it also becomes more vulnerable to infiltrations from the far right. So that's some comments about this issue. Thank you for the question. If someone also wants to say more about this, I don't know if you agree or not, or to say something else. But yeah, this is, there's a question there.
I was a bit surprised that you rooted the free techno movement to Germany. Of course, I could be proud as a guy from Berlin, but I have always the impression that is at least as much a movement from Great Britain. I think in the 80s we already had a big free festival movement which was killed in the Battle of the Beanfield. In the early Thatcher time, we had big free techno parties in Great Britain in the early 90s, and so I think it's at least a British movement as well as a German movement.
Yeah. And also French, because also then the Spiral Tribe went also to France. So yeah, thank you for the specification. Yeah, the squat movement was also very big in London. I started going to London in the 90s, and it was already a very flourishing movement, which now is going down a lot with the new laws.
Maybe it's rather an addition than a question, but I liked a lot, or I always have these two categories of like the hippies and the punks, and I see the activists often in the tradition of the punks, and I even have a table with like the categories, like as you showed it very precisely, even multiple examples of like, I can't bring peace to the world if I don't have peace inside, and then the activist would rather say, I cannot be free unless everybody is free. So, like, where do we start, or where is our focus in change? And I think this is really interesting because I think it's either or. I mean, it's related, and that was just a thought to share.
Yeah, thank you, because that's one of the core points of this presentation. And what I try to suggest is that it's not either or, it's both and. And this is what we need to make space for experimentations in that direction, I think, to really try to open up. And I think the newer generations after Gen X, there is also more openness to experiment across these different identities of subcultures and countercultures, while still in my times it was really like about an allegiance to one specific kind. So you dress in one way, you listen to one kind of music. And now I feel that there is much more spaciousness to learn from each other, to understand how to create also events where the different experts in the different sides can also talk with each other. This is what I would like to see. And without being scared to lose one identity, but really to dare to retain your identity, but also to consider what comes from another identity. What are the gifts of their research over all these years? So yeah, my work in these years has been in this direction, to try to create bridges. Also, that's why it was such a privilege to be able to work both in Boom for most of the time, and I come from that tribe, but also to get to know the fusion. For me, the first times I would come here, it would be such a discovery. Really like realizing there is another part of the family, it's cousins maybe, and they're still part of the same family, even if sometimes, like in every family, there can be a bit of suspiciousness about the others, or no, but I'm different, I like different things. But actually, if one enters these spaces with an open mind, there's so much to learn. And for me, it was really a feast for the nerd inside me to learn about all of this. And I have to say that the Fusion administration trusted me with this job here to start the content area in 2015, like you said. And this proves the openness of their mind, because they had come to Boom Festival and they had seen the cultural area there, because we invited them to be part of a panel. And so from that, they were inspired to create a big cultural area here, which I thought, yeah, it was a big act of trust and a sign of open-mindedness. So yeah, it's good to see that it's going on, the area, and it's still, yeah, doing their best to bring the hot topics, and not only.
So anything more to add?
This Coca-Cola ad was really impressive. And you told that, you know, capitalism appropriating these values is something to think about. And what is your take on it? Is it, do you see some value in capitalism taking these values and promoting it to wider public? Or you see danger? And if it is still dangerous, what is an alternative?
So this is another of the big questions, yeah? I don't have the final answer, but how I see it... So what we saw in that ad is the beginning of what later was also defined as conscious capitalism, which now is morphing into woke capitalism. So a friend of mine wrote an article saying that conscious capitalism is like Diet Coke, so there's also a connection to this. It's still Coke. It's still bad for you in one way or another. Bad for the environment, actually. It's still, you know, capitalism, it's very difficult to find a way to do it that really, really is good. There is always ways in which it fucks us in or the planet in one way or another. So, and at the same time, how do we get rid of it? It's not easy, because it permeates everything, and we are hooked to it, because also it knows which are our weak points, and is very good at hooking us from the weak points. Like I said, many of you will have that song in your head for the rest of the night. So yeah, how to get rid of it? I think this is one of the spaces where we continue this debate, because some people are still trying to find answers to that question. And I think it's a valuable direction to explore. Thank you for the question.
Shall we add one last question? Anybody up for the last question for the talk?
Maybe that's it. Oh.
Maybe again a thought about identification with the movement, or like the cultural thing that can be appropriated only if there is like a visual, like this image in front, like this, as soon as it is like specific, that there is specific clothes, specific...
Gadgets.
Sometimes sounds.
Drugs even.
It can be appropriated or like
it will
capitalized,
be appropriated,
recapitalized, and I always have this like contradiction, because and at some point it's like fuck, I don't want it to be like commercialized, and the other side, like, why not? If people identify with hip hop movement and they wear baggy pants, although I hope they know why they are like this, from the prisoners and the solidarity, but maybe they don't even. So I think this is really interesting on like how the cultural part of a political movement is part, and how to like a lot of movement try to not be a not let themselves like be taken or like even try to be more radical, so it's not possible. I think it's very interesting on how to behave toward that.
Yeah, and I think, for example, here in Fusion, the fact that phones are prohibited, in Boom they're not. And so this is something that creates, you know, I can see how here it helps to maintain the spirit and to maintain the vibe, as also some researchers call it. Yeah, you know, to stay away from the social media culture and the influencers culture, this is another one of the big topics today, because also this is a bit difficult also for the younger generations, because also it's their culture, the digital culture. And so it's more about finding more creative ways around it or whatever. But you see, but this is why this is an experimental ground. This is to try out, like trial and error. How do we try to escape these traps that, you know, it's very easy to fall into? Because also it's very easy that something that was very radical and very cool at the beginning, then it gets gentrified. Also festivals get gentrified. And so it's important to stay aware of what are the practices to avoid it, because it's almost impossible to avoid it. So that's also why it's good that new events are created, smaller ones, and that it continues, that it goes on and on with the spirit and with the values. So I guess that can be the end with this positive note for the future. So yeah, thank you so much, everyone, again.